First of all, thank you for this invitation. I appreciate very much. This is my second time in Leeds. The first time was years and years ago when I was at that time a theologian, so a professor of theology. And I remember very well the topic that I, with a group of theologians, we discussed together. And I also apologize because I could not give my paper in time, but it's my fault because I finished and the translation was finished just yesterday before leaving. So
you were not required to give your paper in time.
But anyway, if it's my fault. My dear friends, the institution of the Pontifical Council for the New Evangelization, I am convinced, represents one of the more mature fruits of Vatican II. And this is not just my personal opinion. I would like, during my speech, to give you some objective considerations of this affirmation. First of all, I would like to go back to the words of the Pope John 23, when in his programmatic allocution, Gaudet Mater Ecclesia, he made a number of references to the capacity to look at our contemporary world in its changed relationship with God, to rediscover ways which may prove adequate for enabling to understand the gospel. The strongest expression of this theologically probably is also the most well known in a theological field. I quote, this is the speech Gaudet Mater Ecclesia for the opening of the Vatican II. So John 23 said, it is necessary that the doctrine itself be examined more broadly and more deeply, and that people drink of it and be informed of it more fully, something desired by all who sincerely proclaim Christian, Catholic, and apostolic truth. It is necessary that this doctrine, certain and immutable, and to which faithful assent, must be given, be deepened and expounded in a way which is demanded by our age. In fact, the deposit of faith is one thing, that is to say, the truths which are contained in our venerable doctrine. But the way in which they are expressed is another, always with the same meaning and the same understanding. But a number of times in the same speech, the Pope referred to concepts which can be related to the theme of the new evangelization. For instance, he spoke of strength of new energies, a new order of things, looking at the present which has brought about new situations and new ways of living, and which has opened up new avenues for the Catholic apostolate. And once again, we must not just safeguard this precious treasure as if we were only concerned with that is ancient, but at the ready, without fear, we must continue in the work which our age requires of us, following, and so and so and so. As you can see, all these expressions are signs of a far-sightedness which recognize new ways of proclaiming the gospel, which is the same forever. There could be more discussion about what Vatican II means for the recent history of the Church. However, from whichever angle it is examined, it continues to follow the objective of seeking to put the Church on the main road of the evangelization of the contemporary world. Lumen Gentium and the Gaudium et Spes, just to refer to the two most ecclesiological constitutions, but also Sacrosanctum Concilium and Dei Verbum, do nothing other than express the same basic idea. How to carry out its principal mission and its priority mission of proclaiming the gospel in a way which is renewed and effective. But there is one important point of reference that can be to certain texts in which the Council, in my humble opinion, explicitly declares this requirement. Of course, we cannot find the expression new evangelization, but in the decree of the Church missionary activity at the Gentes, there is a very evident reference to it. I quote, "This task of evangelization is one and unchangeable in every place and in every situation, even if on the basis of the variety of different circumstances, it is not carried out in the same way. These differences, while they are to be kept in mind in these activities of the Church, are not born of the intrinsic nature of his mission, but stem only from the circumstances in which that one mission is carried out. Those conditions depend both on the Church and on peoples, human groups, or the people to whom that mission is directed. In this missionary activity of the Church, different conditions are to be found and often mixed with one another. First, there is the beginning or the foundation, and then the new development or period of youth. Yet, even when these phases have been concluded, the missionary activity of the Church does not cease. It is then the turn of the particular churches we are already organized to continue it, preaching the gospel to all those who are outside it. Besides, the human groups among whom the Church finds herself changed radically for various reasons, out of which there can arise completely new situations. In this case, the Church has to evaluate whether these are such as to require once more a missionary activity." As may be observed from this last phrase, Vatican's second perspective is put forward concerning the need to develop a new way in which the Church may fulfill what she is called by her nature to do, to conduct evangelization. On his first apostolic journey in Poland in 1979, John Paul II spoke for the first time about new evangelization. He explicitly said, is Homily on Nova Huta. The evangelization of the new millennium must refer to the teaching of the Second Vatican Council. It must be, as that council taught, a work shared by bishops, priests, religious and laity, by parents and young people. This is the same homily in which John Paul II, the blessed John Paul II, spoke for the first time with the expression new evangelization. Benedict XVI, over the course of the last 2 years, has repeatedly posed some questions about the task of the new evangelization. These questions, in my opinion, merit our attention if we are to even try to respond with intelligence and the foresight, not only in relation to the new evangelization, but in order that truly we are able to make a contribution to the formation of the future generations. Speaking last year in Germany, the Pope said, I quote, "God is increasingly being driven out of our society. And the history of Revelation that the scripture recounts to us seems locked into an ever more remote past. Are we to yield to the pressure of secularization and become modern by watering down the faith? Naturally, faith today has to be throughout fresh and above all lived afresh, so that it is sweet to the present day. But yet, it is not by watering the faith down, but by living it today in its fullness that we achieve this. This is a key ecumenical task in which we have to help one another, developing a deeper faith. It is not strategy that saves us and saves Christianity, but faith, and to such faith, Christ enters this world of ours, and with him, the living God. So first of all, is not by watering down faith, but living this faith. Second, there is another occasion, following the same line of reason, he said, I quote, "We see that in our affluent Western world, much is lacking. Many people lack experience of God's goodness. They no longer find any point of contact with the mainstream churches and their traditional structures. But why is this? They need places where they can give voice to their inner longing. And here we are called to seek new paths of evangelization." The last quotation, because also this is very interesting in my opinion, he said, "At the focal point of the debate, the question that arises repeatedly is this: what is a reform of the church? How does it take place? What are its paths and its goals? Not only faithful believers, but also outside observers are noticing with concern that regular church goers are growing older all the time, and that they member is constantly diminishing, that the recruitment of priests is stagnating, that the skepticism and unbelief are growing. What then are we to do? There are endless debates over what must be done in order to reverse the trend. There is no doubt that a variety of things need to be done. But action alone fails to resolve the matter. The essence of the crisis of the Church in Europe is the crisis of faith. If we find no answer to this, if faith does not take on new life, deep conviction and real strength from the encounter with Jesus Christ, then all other reforms will remain ineffective. My dear friends, these and other questions place in their foreground the responsibility to formulate a new apologia of faith. This is not extraneous to believe. On the contrary, it is fully a part of the act by which we enter into the logic of our faith. Giving the reasons for belief is not something which appears to have impassioned many believers in the last decades, which is perhaps why so many Christians appear to have lost their conviction. The appeal to venerable traditions on the one hand, or to the most disparate experiences on the other, have proved unable to galvanize momentum precisely because they lack the force of reason, especially in the context of a culture which imposes itself increasingly with the certainties of science. The situation has become to a certain extent stagnant. Some have thought that the tired repetition of the forms of the past could constitute in some way a bastion, without noticing that they were entirely into a quicksand. To conceive of the new evangelization as something which can take place through the mere representation of the forms of the past is an illusion against we must guard ourselves. At the same time, the solution cannot be the extravagance of inventing novelties in order to satisfy contemporary man in his perennial state of agitation, ready to embark uncritically on any and every experience. The way before us is far from simple. It requires that we remain faithful to our foundation if we are to be able to construct something which is coherent with it and which is capable of being received and understood by a humanity which is different in respect of the past. We are called, therefore, to strongly reaffirm the need to account for our faith, knowing that this must be done with gentleness, respect, and a clear conscience. The invocation of these three terms made in the letter, the first letter of Peter, the invocation of these three terms has for us a programmatic value. The presentation and the announcement by believers of their hope cannot have a recourse to arrogance or pride, born of a sense of superiority over other doctrines or religions. For this reason, it is necessary that the new evangelization be sustained by a new anthropological reflection in an apologetical key, which is capable of communicating with contemporary men. I don't want to be misunderstood about the use of this word in an apologetical way. Apologetical way was misunderstood in the past decades, when normally we thought that apologetics is just a defense of the gospel and the teaching of the church. Apologetic, first of all, is the positive presentation of our faith. This is the apologia. And the apologetical theology is nothing else than, first of all, a positive presentation with a new language, a new categories of thinking. For this reason, I think that without an anthropological reflection in an apologetical key, probably we are not able to communicate with contemporary people. Faith has its own force of credibility, which derives from its being, first of all, in relation with the revelation of God in Jesus Christ. There is two expressions, however, that may help in order to better understand the challenge of the new evangelization. The first belongs to the philosopher, who, when answering a question on the current condition of man, pronounced the following words: "The time of the night of the world is the time of poverty, because it becomes increasingly poor. It has already become so poor as not to recognize God's absence as an absence." Stomatic. The second sentence is a provocation that comes from one of the most prolific thinkers of the 19th century. He said, "The crux of matter is this: if a man steeped in a modern civilization, a European, can still believe, really believe, in the divinity of the Son of God, Jesus Christ, in this indeed is all our faith. Is an European today capable to believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ?" Why the former quotation, the first one, is from Martin Heidegger and results back to the fundamental theme of culture in which there is a need of a new evangelization. The second one is from Dostoevsky and obliges us to focus on the heart of its content. However, both provide a backdrop against which to marshal some considerations in view of the forthcoming Synod of Bishops in October, which will be, as we know, dedicated to the new evangelization and transmission of faith. One of the first aspects emerging from the analysis of the culture of our time is the spasmodic attempt to achieve full autonomy. Contemporary man is strongly characterized as a jealousness of his own independence and the personal responsibility for his own life, often forgetting his relationship with the transcendent. He has become allergic to any form of speculative thought and confined himself to the present moment under the illusion that only that which is the fruit of scientific verification can be true. He has fallen into, among other things, in a sort of a pragmatic empiricism that leads him to value facts over ideas. Without any resistance, he rapidly changes his way of thinking and living, increasingly becoming a kinetic subject. That means ready for every experiment, even eager to become involved in every game, even if it is greater than himself, especially if it leads to him being enraptured by the narcissism which no longer veils, deceive him about the essence of life. I want to say that we are in a culture with an explosion of claims of individual liberty that touch the sphere of sexual life, interpersonal relationship and family, leisure and professional activities. The realms of teaching and communication have been fatally drawn into this, and the entirety of human life has changed. In other words, a completely new situation has been created, one in which there is a race to replace the old values, especially those expressed by Christianity. In a scenario like this, where man occupies the central place, the center of gravity of all forms of existence, God becomes a useless hypothesis and a competitor to avoid, if not something to be eliminated. This turning point was accomplished in a very relatively easy way, often through the complicity of a weak theology and a religiosity based more on emotion, unable to show the broader horizon of faith. In some way, my dear brothers and sisters, we are no more children of the car. We become day by day children of Schleiermacher. He is always so emotion. Faith cannot be just emotion. It's also emotion, but it's not just emotion. How can we give reason of our act of faith? I remember my students, my former students, when sometimes during the exams, my students were all seminarians, the majority seminarians, during the exams or just to challenge, they said, well, why do you believe? Tell me, why do you believe? Do you believe? Oh, sure, Father. Well, tell me, why do you believe? Why do you believe? But I never asked myself this question. That's bad. It's very bad. It's very bad. Because you can know the content of faith like chemical forms, but if you are not able to give reasons why do you believe, you are strange of this. In this context, dear friends, God loses his central place. The consequence of this, however, is that man himself loses his place. The eclipse of the meaning of life reduces man to no longer knowing his own place, to no longer finding a place with creation and society. He somehow falls into the Promethean temptation and into the illusion to own life and death, because he decides there when, how, and where. Here, finally, is the great challenge for the future. He who wants the freedom to live as if God did not exist can do it, but he should know what he will face. One must be aware that this choice to live without God is not the premise of freedom or autonomy. Limiting himself to simply being in charge of his life will not satisfy the demand of freedom. Silencing the desire for God that is rooted deep within will not lead to autonomy. The enigma of personal existence is not resolved by refusing mystery, but by choosing to enter into it. This is the path to take. Every shortcut runs the risk of getting lost, meandering in the woods from which point it is impossible to see a way out or the destination.